on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'll be your host today, this Wednesday, October 2nd, 2024. And because it's October 2nd, it means we are now officially less than 1 week away from our upcoming Invest Talk KPP Financial Wealth webinar. Now, as you should know by now, because we've been mentioning it for a couple weeks, this upcoming wealth webinar is free and will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Now, it all happens in just 6 days. So go over to investtalk.com if you're interested. It is free, but you'll need to go and sign up to reserve your spot for our wealth webinar next Tuesday, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific. Now, with that being said, it is time to carry on our mission each and every day here at Invest Talk to leave better, more informed investors. And to that end, we will talk about today's market performance in a little bit and, of course, run down the show topics that we have for you. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, Luke, Justin. Thank you for all your valuable insights. I had a stock which I have a small profit, and I wanted to see if I could add a little bit more. The symbol is C as in Charlie, H, R, D as in David, CHRD. I would really appreciate if you could give your insights. Thank you so much.
So ticker CHRD is Chord Energy. We have gotten questions about this company, I'd say quite a bit, probably mostly within the context of a merger that was happening earlier in the year where they bought out a company called Enerplus. And so Chord Energy Corp is a oil, natural gas exploration company. I believe they also have some investment in renewable technology as well. And so as you'd expect, we mention this from time to time, anytime you're looking at a company that is predicated upon an underlying commodity, in this case, 73% of their business is crude oil, 18% is from purchased crude oil, so what they don't actually manufacture themselves, and then 8% from natural gas. This is going to be primarily predicated, profits are predicated on the price of the underlying commodities. We all know oil is at a pretty decent low right now for many reasons. We'll actually dig into those a little bit later on. But as such, Chord Energy is down 21% year-to-date. Some of that is due to the merger, but they're down 21% year-to-date, up 21 basis points today. And they've lost a lot in terms of relative strength. But if you look at the company fundamentally, they had $431 million in debt at the end of last year, $1.1 billion in debt in the most recent quarter on an $8 billion market cap. They pay a 3.83% dividend yield. You can see going back 3 years, that dividend has fluctuated from 2.1 to 3.8. But in terms of dividend per share, I mean, it's it's been increasing since 2021. So this is a situation much like a lot of other companies. We get questions on Ulta Beauty, any other energy companies, where it looks like this is a company that is a solid company fundamentally that is just suffering from a stock perspective, suffering from a profit perspective due to what's happening with its underlying product, in this case, oil. And so if you're up a little bit, fantastic. I think this company is still a buy. It's a pretty solid exploration company up there with the best of them, I would say. And that's because they have very little debt and pay a juicy dividend, and just fundamentally, they're just a solid company. So if you want to add a little more, I don't see any problem there, especially given the drawdown with the price of oil. Over the next 6 months, over the next year, 2 years, we expect that some of these energy companies to come back even stronger given where oil prices are now and where they likely are to head within the next couple of years. Maybe not the short term, but certainly medium to long term. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you, time permitting. My main focus point today concerns this topic: Apple's AI strategy, economic implications of iPhone 16 rollout. Now, Apple's integration of artificial intelligence features in the newest iPhone, the iPhone 16, has analysts projecting that this move could add $10 billion in annual services revenue. Also, we'll touch on forecasts of where home prices are headed. Certainly, there's been a lot of discussion around falling interest rates, but is that really going to drive prices lower? We'll also touch on some veiled threats, I would say, from Saudi Arabia regarding oil production. They're not too happy about what their OPEC Plus partners have been doing. And should we have time at the end of the show? We'll touch a little bit, talk a little bit on the construction sector and how that's been lifting payrolls. The most recent data, that's been where a good amount of jobs have been coming from as of last month. We also have some caller voice bank questions ready to play, including one on Micron Technologies, that's MU, and one on Halliburton, ticker HAL, and some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, call now. 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Well, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc. It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today before we move forward. U.S. stocks were a little bit higher, the Dow up 9 basis points, S&P 500 up 1 basis point, one giant basis point, NASDAQ up 8, Russell 2000 down 9 basis points. Overall, we would call that flat for the day, though they did flirt a little bit with being rather negative and slightly positive. Outperformers included semis, particularly semi-cap equipment names, as well as China Tech, asset managers, casinos, hotels. Laggards look like apparel companies didn't do particularly well, retail, autos, airliners, pharma and biotech, some of the other underperformers on the day. Dollar index was up 40 basis points, with the yen under some outsized pressure on dovish comments out of the Bank of Japan. Gold finished down 80 basis points. Crude oil settled up 40 basis points. And I'd say overall stocks stabilized today, largely shrugging off some recent Middle East developments and a lot of tension in the region. It's important to remember the situation still does remain fluid, and a big question now is really what the size and the shape of any Israeli-U.S. retaliation will be to yesterday's Iranian missile attack. Work stoppage at U.S. East and Gulf Coast ports, another widely flagged potential growth and supply chain risk. It's going to be interesting to see how that develops in the coming weeks and months. ADP private payrolls came out today. Number came in at 143,000 above the 125,000 consensus. Pay growth cooled again with the annual pay increases for both job stayers and changers at the lowest level since Q2 of 2021. Report comes ahead of Friday's September employment report, though market unlikely to get much incremental color on the 25 versus 50 basis point debate for November, as the meeting is still some ways away. Regarding that report on Friday, Street looking for a 140,000 increase in non-farm payrolls following a 142,000 gain in August, while unemployment rate expected to hold at 3.8%. And average hourly earnings growth seen decelerating 10 basis points to 30 basis points month over month. Now, hoping you've been telling your friends and your family members that our InvestTalk audio podcast is also available in video format on our InvestTalk YouTube channel. And for those of you that go and like to watch us rather than listen to us, or maybe you're doing both, if you leave a question in the comment section of our InvestTalk YouTube channel, we like to get to that as soon as we possibly can. And so this question came in from Doug Turns, Dougie Turns, and it's on ticker ATKR. And so it says, I just have one question about ticker ATKR. It's an industrial stock. Its growth looks decent, but does have a bit of share dilution. I was wondering if I could get your guys' opinion on it. So ATKR is Atkore. It is an electrical products global manufacturing company, which means it's probably going to be a rather cyclical company. A lot of it is going to be predicated upon where we are in the industrial and construction cycle, what infrastructure investment has looked like, et cetera, et cetera. So taking a look at this company, looks like profitability has fallen off since the pandemic. It's been pretty steady downward since the end of 2021. Cash flow has been falling as well. I don't see much in the wake of shared dilution. It looks like they've actually been buying back shares. It looks like they had 45 million in shares outstanding in 2020. Now they're at about 35 million in shares outstanding. It's a $3 billion company. It's got about $921 million in debt. It pays a 1.52% dividend in terms of dividend yield, dividend per share. Looks like it's actually projected to pay its first dividend this year, at least over the past 5 years, projected to be about 49 cents per share. Taking a look at their margins, have actually improved on their gross margin. Looks like it's up from about 22% in 2018 to about 36% last year. Net margin has improved as well from 7% to about 19.3%. On a relative valuation basis, it's about at its averages, price to book about 1.9. Actually, that's well below its five-year average of about 5. Though for a name that's in the industrial space, I'd expect that to be closer to 2 where it is right now. In terms of price to cash flow, it looks like 5.2 relative to its five-year average of 7.9. You know, to me, it looks like this is a company that may be exhibiting the downward pressure of being a cyclical industrial name. Year-to-date, it's down 47%. 3 months, it's down 36%. And in spite of all that, there is still 11.22% short interest out there. It's pretty clear over the past 3 years that although the profitability in terms of net margin has grown, return on assets has fallen, return on equity has fallen, it's going to fall again this year. Cash flow is falling as well. Relative strength has dropped off since April. And the chart reflects it as well. It's trying to find some level of support. Now, the market's telling you to stay away from this name with that 11.22% short interest. I'm going to tell you to stay away from it as well. Let's go to Paul in Hayward, who has a question about WMB. Is that correct? WMB?
Yeah, Williams Companies.
Okie doke. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I do own it. I have it in a balanced portfolio. I originally bought it as a kind of a dividend play. I've held it for a couple of years, so I have some nice gains stocked away. I just wanted to get your take on, is it something you would hold going forward? It's had a nice run. Would it be a good time to take profits or just see what you think?
Yeah, of course. So Williams Company is headquartered in Oklahoma. It is a energy infrastructure company, so it has to do with the transportation, selling, processing of natural gas and petroleum products. Interestingly enough, as most energy companies are flat to slightly down over the past 3 months, it's actually up 12%, up 44% over the 52-week period, up 36% year-to-date. It's a $56 billion market cap company and only has about $26 billion in debt. It's a little leveraged, in my opinion, because its interest coverage ratio is just over 2x. But, you know, this is at a time where I would expect its revenue, given where demand is, be based on commodity prices to be lower. So in a normal static environment, I don't expect its interest coverage ratio to be that concerning. Now, its cash flow has been improving. We like that. Its profitability has been improving. We like that. And the chart is up and to the right since February, so also something we like as well. In terms of its growth, it's been pretty solid on a five-year basis, but it has fallen off since 2022. But again, that's just going to be a byproduct of the business that it's in. Let's look at its relative valuation. Trading at 23 times earnings, trading at 4.6 times price to book. It seems to me like it's a little bit overvalued right now, and I mean, that makes sense. It's up 3% today and up, again, 44% on the 52-week. But it's not like egregiously overvalued. If I were you and you hold a good position in it, I would probably trim here. But I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it completely. There's nothing really that's flagging, in my opinion. Nothing that looks too alarming. But certainly if you're up a bit, I would take some profits. It is on the upper end of its target price range for the past couple quarters. But nothing too alarming, in my opinion. That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
Awesome. Have a wonderful day. Now we're moving into break, and still to come in this podcast and radio show on AM 1220, we will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point. Stay with me. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Newest InvestTalk Wealth Webinar is happening online and free soon. The InvestTalk Wealth Webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming Wealth Webinar, October 8th.
Let's dive straight into our main focus point today, which concerns this topic, Apple's AI strategy, economic implications of the iPhone 16 rollout. And so Apple's latest announcement of the iPhone 16 series is likely to be paired with a slower rollout of not just the phone, but according to the company, a slower rollout of AI features that could impact this year's upgrade cycle. Now, Apple CEO Tim Cook unveiled the new iPhone lineup, highlighting the much-anticipated Apple Intelligence features. But here's the catch. Those AI-driven capabilities won't be available until later in the fall. Instead, some of the initial AI tools like Writing Help and Photo Editing will roll out in beta this month, available only in US English. And other key features, like AI-generated custom emojis, won't arrive until later in the year, with the biggest updates pushed really well into 2025. So why does this matter? But Apple typically relies on its annual iPhone releases to drive a wave of sales into the fall. And not only does this affect Apple, but smaller retailers, wireless carriers, suppliers, they all depend on this boost as well. But the delayed AI features mean early buyers won't get access to many of the exciting new capabilities right away. And so it becomes less of an upgrade in terms of getting a new phone, and people are going to be less likely to want to upgrade, at least in the near term. Now, these new features could certainly drive more adoption later on, but if you want to get the new phone because of these new features, you would probably wait. Meanwhile, Apple's competitors are not waiting. Samsung has already rolled out AI translation features. Google's Pixel 9 comes packed with AI tools like image generation and call transcribing, really giving them a leg up in the AI race. So with the features delayed, Apple will have to lean heavily on hardware improvements to entice buyers. Now, those hardware improvements are certainly less sexy than the new artificial or Apple Intelligence features. A faster processor, a larger screen, new camera control buttons that offers more precision for photography enthusiasts, but nothing that really would drive most people to purchase. Another thing that may be good is certainly their better battery life thanks to the larger capacity batteries, but these are things that you kind of expect each year with these new iPhones. So the bottom line is early iPhone 16 buyers will be paying for what Apple Intelligence features could become, not really what they're going to get right out of the box. As Apple tries to catch up to competition in the AI space, the real question is whether these hardware improvements will be enough to drive this year's sales. Again, it could be next year, sales could be pushed towards next year. The question isn't about if people are going to buy phones. People always buy iPhones. The question is, when are people going to buy them? So will buyers be holding off until Apple's full AI vision is realized in the coming years? And all of this is already and will continue to affect the efficacy of Apple as an investment in both the short and in the medium term. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, InvestTalk, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about Micron Technologies, ticker symbol MU. I know there's been a few calls on this ticker, but the recent earnings, it popped a bit. I purchased it a few days ago, around like the 90 area. And one, if you thought maybe I should trim here, hold, sell it all. Just wanted to kind of get your thoughts to see if this is the beginning of something, or it could be a good time to possibly trim it or sell or just keep it. Thanks a lot. Love what you guys do. Bye-bye.
So Micron Technologies is a name that we have held for our clients. As it started to fall, we started to buy more. And that's because we think fundamentally it is a good company. Now, their most recent quarterly report, revenue for the quarter ending August 29th, surged 93.3% year over year to $7.75 billion, with earnings per share of $1.18, far surpassing analyst expectation. Because of that, there was a pretty decent pop. Now, it was trading earlier in the year at around 140, subsequently dropped down to about 88. I think we started picking up again for our clients below about 89. And so it did pop over to about 107 after in the wake of earnings. But I think the big takeaway here for me is that a lot of this was driven by their AI data center demand. And so not only did they provide good performance data for the most recent quarter, but they're also expecting pretty solid fiscal performance going into Q1 2025. And so what you're seeing is, since about mid-2023, cash flow improving, profitability improving. They pay a 46 basis point dividend in terms of their dividend yield, and that's been pretty consistent over the past 4 years. But the real story here for me is the growth within the business over the past year, from $15 billion in revenue to about $25 billion in revenue, a lot of that driven by that secular growth theme. And it's doing all this in such a way that it is not overly valued like a lot of these structural semi names. Trades at a price to book of 2.5 relative to its five-year average of 2. Price earnings of 10. Think of where a lot of semi names are trading in terms of their forward-looking price to earnings, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. Over the past year, this has been a name that has been able to exhibit some growth within that data center segment through their DRAM products. And so headed into the new year, given where it's priced, we are still holding on to this for our clients. We expect it has a lot of room to run upward. Thanks for the call. On the next Invest Talk, understanding the potential impact of election results on stocks like NVIDIA, Snap, and Tesla can provide insights into their future performance. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. InvestTalk. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Richard from Valencia, who has a question about ELS. Do you own it? Are you looking to buy it?
Hi, I was looking to buy it. First of all, I want to also, thanks for always putting on a great show and for taking my call.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for calling in.
ELS, that Equity Lifestyle Properties, with interest rates going down, I was kind of looking at trying to get into a REIT. Would you say this is a good thing to get into at its current price?
Yeah, well, you have the right idea. Generally speaking, REITs tend to do better when interest rates are either stable or directionally they're going down, and we know that they're going down. And so a lot of REITs have been starting to perform better than they have in the past couple years. Now, Equity Lifestyle Properties, it is a REIT, and they primarily invest in manufactured homes and RV communities. And a lot of it is for, I would say, vacationing families and retirees. And so it's kind of a niche area of the real estate space. Personally, there's other types of REITs that I like better. I like the REITs like gambling REITs have done particularly well. Storage REITs have done particularly well. But that being said, it doesn't mean that this is a bad area to be in. So the reason why I would say that this is probably a good time to keep ELS on your watch list is that they do have a really strong portfolio. Their liquidity is very solid. The amount of debt they have is not too much, $3.4 billion on a $13 billion market cap company. And their dividend yield, though not crazy high, is still solid in 1.5 to 2.5 range over the past 5 years. My problem is that their price to funds from operations, which is typically how you would value a REIT, is a little high. It's at a 23 times right now. Now, the five-year average is around 26, but still 23 times for price to FFO is a little high for me. So I would probably wait until that comes back down closer to the 20 range, or maybe look for a REIT that has not much debt, maybe in a more or not non-niche area like this is, but certainly one that is trading at a lower valuation. I think this looks a little expensive to me.
Is there an entry rate or entry price that you would recommend for this particular REIT?
Like I said, I think if it gets below a price to funds from operation of about 20, then I would probably think that's a good area to enter. I'd have to do some quick math that I can't really do right now to figure out what that is. But if you look at the price to funds from operation, if that dips below 20, that's when I think it would be a good place to enter.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Now let's shift gears and talk about housing. And that's because there's a seemingly unstoppable rise of housing prices, which continues to defy expectations even after multiple economic shocks over the past really 20 years. After the 2007-09 financial crisis, global house prices dipped by about 6% in real terms, but quickly rebounded. And that happened once again when COVID-19 hit. Experts predicted another property crash, but instead the market saw a boom as house hunters rushed to buy homes. Now, since 2021, central banks have been raising interest rates to fight inflation, though they did start dropping them more recently. And once again, fears of housing market crashes have circulated. But what does the reality look like? Well, prices only fell by about 5.6%, and now they're climbing rapidly once more. So why is this happening? Well, historically, housing wasn't always such a major asset class. Early 20th century, prices stayed pretty steady thanks to efficient construction and better transport infrastructure. But things started to change after World War II. Governments began subsidizing mortgages, urbanization increased, and new land use regulations made it harder to build homes. Now, a big part of the story is how the market has responded to recent interest rate hikes. Many homeowners have locked in fixed rate mortgages, those golden handcuffs before the pandemic, which has shielded them from rising rates. And so looking ahead, there's really three key factors suggesting that housing prices will continue to rise for years to come. The first is demographics. The rich world's foreign-born population is growing at a record rate. Immigrants need places to live, driving up both rents and housing prices. Even with stricter immigration policies, the need for housing will remain high as aging population demand care and services. Another is urbanization. Despite predictions that remote work would reduce the appeal of reduce the appeal of cities, big urban areas are still in demand. Jobs, social activities, and opportunities are still pretty concentrated in these major cities, and so that pushes up the competition for housing. Lastly is infrastructure. Poor infrastructure is definitely limiting people's ability to live further from urban centers. Congestion and slow transport improvements in cities like Los Angeles, where I live, are making commuting far more difficult, and that increases the demand for homes closer to where one works. So while some places have started to loosen restrictions on housing developments, the overall trend is that building remains slow, especially in cities where demand is the highest. And even though economic growth, interest rates, and other factors may impact the housing market in the short term, the long-term forces of demographics, urbanization, and really lack of improvements of infrastructure being the most important one, in my opinion, are likely to keep pushing prices upward. Let's head out back over to the InvestTalk YouTube question bank and answer a question from ShawneeBoy111 on OPFI. It says, speaking of credit card debt, which maybe we were speaking of credit card debt in the episode that this person was watching. Speaking of credit card debt, I'm wondering what you think of the profitable growing company, OPFI. I own a small position and I'm looking at expanding it, but would love some analysis from KPP on this one. Maybe a good buy point going forward. So as we pull this up, OPFI is OPFI Inc. It's a fintech name. And what it does is it works with banks to provide lending products to consumers who might not really have access to traditional credit opportunities. And the way it does that is through some of its underwriting algorithms that have seen some pretty high loan default rates, which is why this company has been pretty weak since 2021 on a relative performance basis relative to the S&P 500. Now, it's a very small company, about $551 million in terms of its market cap, and about $316 million in debt. So it's pretty levered. Now, going back to 2023, it didn't make money, but this year it is projected to make 74 cents a share. Next year, it's projected to make 77 cents a share. Now, in spite of its price falling off, its cash flow has been improving, and that's because its sales have grown as well. From $263 million in December of 2021, projected to be $519 million this year. So almost doubled over the past 4 years. Now, year to date, it's down about 8%, 5% down today. 52 weeks, it's up 84%. This is an incredibly volatile name in the fintech space that is not overly levered, but still has a lot of debt on its balance sheet. Now, it's important to note it does not pay a dividend. It has bought back a lot of shares, so it hasn't issued any shares in the past 5 years, which is something we like. And there's 6% short interest right now. And so one thing that I'm seeing here is a note that a lot of its earnings are attributable to non-controlling interest. And so that's really distorted some of its forward-looking price-to-earning multiples. And so though it looks cheap in terms of its earnings at 6.5, it in reality is not as cheap as it looks. So overall, I would say I would probably stay away from this company. Its numbers are not like it's illegally distorted, but the way, based on certain accounting tricks, it looks that are perfectly legal, it looks cheaper than it otherwise would be. So it's trading at a price to book of about 36 times. Certainly growth is fantastic. But again, the market is signaling it's probably not a good buy right now. It may be due to its debt. It may be due to unreasonably high loan default rates. Either way, I would stay away from OppFi for now. Thanks for watching. Let's go to our voicemail bank and answer a caller question that came in earlier from Michigan.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is a longtime listener. My name is Kyle. I'm from Michigan. And I had a question about Halliburton Company, ticker symbol HAL. I was wondering if it was a good buy now, and if not, at what price would it be a good buy, or is this just a value trap? Looking forward to hearing the answer on Invest Talk. Thank you for everything that you guys do. Bye.
So Halliburton is a, let's say, famous name, very large name, $27 billion market cap. And what it is it's an oil field services company, which means it provides products and services to upstream oil and gas industry. And so what drives revenue, what drives the price of the stock? Well, it's going to be the price of oil and also the demand, therefore, the demand of creating and servicing new wells. Now, 20 years ago, Halliburton had a lot more pricing power. Oil field servicing companies had a lot more pricing power than they do now. Why? They had a lot more customers. Now, a lot of it is consolidated such that the ability to set prices of these oil servicing companies is not what it once was. And so although their services are essential, testing wells, creating wells, all types of services, they can't really charge as much as they used to be able to. Now, with that being said, it's still a great company. They have cash flow that's been improving for the past couple of years. Their profitability looks pretty solid. They made $1.73 in 2022, $2.92 last year, $3.13 this year, $3.47 next year, all improving in terms of forward-looking earnings per share. Now, they paid dividend, about 2.3% dividend yield is what they had in 2024, and that's pretty much within the normalized range. Now, that dividend was about 72 cents per share 5 years ago. That dipped during the pandemic back up to 68 cents per share this year. Their net margin has improved from 9.5% in 2021, projected to be almost 12% this year. Again, this is a situation where you have a company that is fundamentally sound, $26 billion, only $8.7 billion in debt. That's cash flow is improving. That's profitability looks solid. It's been buying back shares. But its stock price is down probably primarily due to the fact that oil is not doing so hot right now. And so even though, like I said, these companies don't have the ability to set prices as they did 20 years ago, they're still essential, and Halliburton will probably still remain essential within the oil services industry. So given where the price of oil is right now, I think this is a perfectly fine time to pick it up. Thanks for the call. Well, 2024 is moving fast, and the proof is this. We just started the fourth quarter. You may have noticed that we've been telling you that a new market environment has taken hold, and there are many reasons for this. So serious investors need to be able to adjust their thinking and strategies to fit these changing times. Let me remind you that here on Invest Talk and at KPP Financial, we operate with a philosophy of independent thinking, shared success. We offer unbiased guidance and practice parallel investing, where we invest alongside our clients in our investment strategies that we implement for ourselves. So I encourage you to take advantage of our offer to provide a free portfolio review assessment via telephone, Skype, or Zoom. Send us a message through investtalk.com. It is free. There is no obligation. We just like to talk to people. You show us your portfolio. We tell you how we think it can be improved. This is Invest Talk, now with more than 59 million downloads. Our work continues in 30 seconds, so hang on.
Here's a quick reminder. The newest Invest Talk Wealth webinar is happening soon, Tuesday, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. The Invest Talk Wealth webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming wealth webinar, October 8th. It's free to attend, but you must pre-register. And please tell your friends.
Looks like we have another, our third live call of the day. We do love live calls. This time, Sammy from San Francisco, who has a question about Uber.
Yeah, thanks, Luke, for taking my call. Yeah, I would like to get your point of view on Uber. Do you think it's at a good point for taking position, or should I wait?
Let's take a look. So I'll start with a story, which is interesting. And I was actually in the Bay last weekend, this previous weekend, and there was a 45-minute traffic holdup. I couldn't figure out why. Eventually, I just got out of my Uber, and I started walking, and there was like a line of 10 Waymos that had just decided to stop in the middle of the street. And why this is important is because the biggest threat to Uber's business is self-driving cars. And that's because over the past decade, what they have is built a brand that has been essential in really transportation everywhere, right? Not just for people who are traveling like I was last weekend, but maybe late night. You know, it has decreased the incidence of drunk driving. It's been so useful because of how ubiquitous it is. And so maybe a couple months ago, I'd think to myself that there's a big threat from some of these other companies that are working in driverless technology. I think there's probably a lot more room to run than even I had previously thought with regards to that. So taking a look at Uber, it's important to note that 2023 was actually the first year that they are profitable, made 87 cents per share last year, projected to be $1.08 this year, and then grow again to $2.28 next year. Now they have $11 billion in debt on a $155 billion market cap company. Not overly levered at all. Their cash flow is improving. Their profitability is improving. They don't pay any dividend yield. And it is important to note that they have been issuing shares. But given how the business is finally turning profitable, I imagine that that will probably stop, given that they have internally generated revenue that they can run off of now. Now, with all this in mind, it is trading at 12 times in terms of its price to book and 37 times its forward-looking earnings, probably due to the excitement of it finally turning a profit. And so given that it's up around 59-60% over the past year, I would probably keep this on my watch list for now. Wait until it dips back to a price to book of closer to 10. It looks a little bit overvalued to me right now. But overall, I do think that over the next couple of years, certainly compared to my opinion several months ago, that there isn't as much a threat to Uber's core business as I thought there would be. And so, you know, I think over the long term, it's probably still a solid investment. Thanks for the call. As Invest Talk, I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here, that is to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, it's Art from Tucson here. Today I'm calling in about a small building material company, small cap, called Jeld Wen. And its ticker symbol is JELD. It's situated in Charlotte, North Carolina, and unfortunately, due to the catastrophic storms there, there will be a lot of rebuilding of businesses and homes in that area in the foreseeable future. And Jeld Wen sells wood, metal, composite materials, doors, windows, and other types of products like that, which I would think would be in high demand in that area. Just seeing what you think about the company, if you agree that it might do well, unfortunately, because of the misfortune of that area due to this last storm. Anyway, seeing what you think, and appreciate all you do for us, and I'll listen on the podcast. Thanks.
Well, certainly, you know, our hearts over at InvestTalk go out to those who are suffering in the wake of the disastrous hurricane from last week. And so with that being said, certainly there will be a lot of rebuilding. And I think you have to expand that theme beyond just the immediate term, and that both political parties recognize that there is a housing crisis in this country and that there is not enough housing inventories. And fixing that is going to not be a short-term solution. It is going to be a decades-long process. And that is because we are trying to reverse a lack of building, something we talked about earlier in the show, a lack of building in the wake of not just the past 20 years, but going back to the end of World War II. And so in doing that, there are going to be a lot of companies that are structurally helping that effort that will do particularly well. Now, with respect to Jeld Wen, I'm not sure that this company will do particularly well in the near term, and that is because they have a lot of debt, $1.3 billion in debt on a $1.3 billion market cap company. Their cash flow is all over the place. Their profitability has been falling precipitously over the past 4 years. They have bought back shares. They don't pay a dividend. Their earnings have been downgraded. I would say overall, this looks like a company that has been suffering in terms of relative strength since 2018. I don't know if they even have the capability to supply all of what is going to be necessary. I imagine there's going to be a lot of firms that are involved. Certainly, your thinking is accurate in what is likely to be, again, a decades-long trend of building. But for me, I would look elsewhere. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off to the day, I wanted to talk a little bit about recent developments within OPEC Plus that could have major implications for global oil prices. The tension revolves around Saudi Arabia, the key player in the group, and its frustration with other members who aren't really sticking to their agreed upon production limits. Their oil minister, Saudi's oil minister, has warned that oil prices could drop as low as $50 a barrel if certain members of OPEC Plus don't stop overproducing. Countries like Iraq and Kazakhstan have been producing more oil than their quotas allow, which has been undermining efforts by the cartel to stabilize prices through production cuts. This overproduction is part of what's keeping global oil prices below $75 a barrel, which is interesting because it's even in spite of rising geopolitical tensions in the Middle East. To give you some context, OPEC Plus has been working for months to curb supply in an effort to prop up prices. But despite multiple extensions of these cuts, prices continue to fall. Now, it's also important to note that the group's share of global oil market has shrunk to about 48% this year, down from 51%. And a lot of that is because there's been some production increases in countries like the United States, the largest producer of oil now, Brazil and Guyana. And so that has heated up competition outside of OPEC Plus. Now, Saudi Arabia, which needs prices around about $85 a barrel to fund its economic priorities, is clearly running out of patience. And so what could happen if other members don't fall in line as they would like them to, as you could see Saudi Arabia take some drastic action. Recall back in 2020, Saudi Arabia launched a price war by ramping up production in response to Russia's noncompliance. What did that do? It dropped oil prices. Similarly, back in the 1980s, they pushed prices down below $10 a barrel. So what's at stake? Saudi Arabia does open up the spigots again. It could send oil prices crashing, which could not only hurt other oil exporters, but also have ripple effects across the global economy. So for now, OPEC Plus members have agreed to delay any production increases until December. And surely this means OPEC Plus is at a crossroads. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get yours, and they can get theirs anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.